yak babies, sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Elmer's Flavor Glue. My name's Aaron, I'm here with our personal pals, Brick.
Hello, boys.
Yes, and we have New American Nico.
Hello, boys.
Hello, indeed. No one said this good morning, but it is morning. Possibly our earliest record ever. I do want to frame this episode because we, a couple months ago, we released an episode about White Noise, the book by Don DeLillo. We all read it and discussed it for our Canon or Canon series. And then we were going to watch the movie. There's been a film adaptation that came out, I guess, last year.
2 years ago.
2022, yeah.
Like 14 months, but yeah.
Right. But we didn't get around to it. We finally watched it last night, and we wanted to do a group chat to discuss our thoughts on the film. We all liked the novel, I recall. I think maybe, yeah. Brick, you were the least enthused, maybe?
Yeah, before. I thought it was a pretty good book.
But you still were into it, yeah.
I got hung up on canon or canon particulars.
Right.
Yeah.
A novel we had all read to some capacity before, I think, and revisited it and sort of found it had, you know, familiar and new resonance, which is great. The film is directed by Noah Baumbach and written by him as well. It stars Adam Driver as the main character, Jack Gladney, and Greta Gerwig is his wife, Babette, and Don Cheadle is Murray, the other professor. That's kind of the main cast, and then the rest are kind of, you know, bit players here and there, except for the kids, who are mostly, like, relatively unknown performers.
Jesse Eisenberg Jr. was the Heinrich.
Yeah,
sounded related exactly to him, like, but he sounded exactly like him.
Yeah, exactly.
It must be a Noah Baumbach thing.
Yeah, it could be. Could be. I mean, certainly.
Wasn't Eisenberg's first movie, The Squid and the Whale?
It was, yeah. Or one of his early. Maybe not his first, but definitely early for sure.
First one anyone
Jesse
ever heard.
Jesse Eisenberg
of.
Head over here.
He's my favorite. I do like Noah Baumbach, actually. But,
okay.
Well, I like.
Yeah, me too.
I like Wes Anderson, so. Get Noah Baumbach by proxy.
Well, that's interesting you mentioned that, because I definitely thought at some points that watching White Noise that there were very Anderson, Wes Anderson moves, but also, like, it's more, whereas Wes Anderson's a bit more mannered, like, Noah Baumbach is a bit more.
But wasn't he his, like, protege or whatever?
Yeah, they're friends and collaborators. Like, yeah. They have worked together for sure.
I feel like Noah Baumbach, I don't know, this is just my sense, I feel like Noah Baumbach's more of a writer. And his directing side is,
yeah,
I don't know, less.
I think that's evident in this movie a little bit, but
yeah, because this, I got big Coen Brothers vibes from it, because it's like,
yeah,
that kind of farcy satiric tone that I don't think Noah Baumbach did as well as the Coen Brothers do. I don't think it was as consistent. Though it hit good highs, but like when he tries to do the serious stuff and it switches, the tone is like just all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that we'll get into it, but I think the last part, maybe the last like 20 minutes is like the weakest part of the film probably for me, which is when it gets a bit more of that serious thing. But yeah, you're right. You get the kind of that absurd Coen Brothers tone, the sort of, there's not exactly jokes. There's just like absurd, weird dialogue and situations that lead to humor. Yeah, totally. So, okay. Thoughts overall. I liked it overall. I thought it was pretty good.
I did too. I think Nico's right. It was inconsistent.
Yeah.
I think some of that comes down to the acting.
Yeah.
The dialogue has a real like stage play feel to it, which is reflecting sort of the dialogue of the book that has that.
Yeah.
It's meant to come across as kind of weird, but it worked in some scenes much better than others, right? Yeah. There's some scenes where it really felt like a stage play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the dialogue, but also I think the two lead performances, Driver and Gerwig, are definitely pitching it as like theater performances, right? So even the delivery feels theater-y, which then combined with the dialogue, which is, Dickie said, sort of kind of stilted and strange, makes it feel like
there are some times where it really works.
Yeah.
And then there are other times. For me, the scenes with the kids, it felt too.
Yeah.
It's too far in that direction.
I don't think Driver did a good job with those scenes. So I thought he was really good at the kind of the more absurd scenes where like the one where
the professor scenes.
Yeah, where he's in Don Cheadle's class and he's like great. Sitting on perched on the bench like some kind of vulture.
Yeah.
And then he's like giving this huge speech about Hitler. He did great in that scene, but when he just has to talk to his kids, it felt really stilted because the words are so convoluted because Jack, the character, is such a dipshit, but I don't think Driver really got that side of him. And then every time he was in a scene with Don Cheadle was like blowing him off the screen.
Yeah, Cheadle was the best part of the movie. You're right, he's more of a writer maybe, because some of those scenes, you know, where Driver did struggle, I think Gerwig too, it had that kind of Clerks mumblecore cadence to it, which is not surprising. Right. But that, I think it just didn't fit what...
It didn't fit the actor, I think.
Yeah.
It fit the character, but I don't think the actor... Like, in Coen Brothers movies, I feel like they do a really good job of pairing an actor to a character and to the way that they speak so that it feels natural. And some actors, like Don Cheadle, I think, can just do it. And Don Cheadle, every line that Don Cheadle said felt completely natural to me, no matter how convoluted the wording.
And his are structured the same, and that's what it came out of that delivery, where it felt much more performative, I guess, with Driver and Gerwig.
There's just this feeling like I felt the whole time like Driver was focusing really hard on saying the line and like getting all of the words in there.
Yeah.
And less on like emoting more or like feeling it. I don't know. It's a weird.
Yeah, like you watch like a Shakespeare adaptation and sometimes it is just Shakespeare in another scene, and then sometimes they do a really good job of making the words fit into a different, you know.
The difference between an actor who like knows
what
the words mean versus an actor who has memorized them and is just kind of trying to get through them all and say them in the right order. Just a little bit, you know, it's like just a tiny difference, but I think it makes a real difference in the feel of it.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think I like his performance more than you guys did, but I think you're right that it has that kind of mannered feeling to it, and it's more about intonation than about the internality of the character, maybe. And Cheadle's just so naturally fits in that role of like a weirdo, a weirdo professor, where he doesn't have to try hard, which is great. It's what makes his scene so alive and so you know, all his stuff in the grocery store, he delivers the monologue about the codes and symbols and stuff in the grocery store scene. That was really, really well done. What did you guys make of the sort of changes to the plot? There are a couple of key changes. Mostly the ending is the most significant, I would say, but they eliminate the character of the dad, Babette's dad, right? And instead Murray gives him the gun instead of the dad giving him the gun. And then there's a couple other things that are kind of changed for the most part. There's the wilderness adventure sequence.
That part was weird. I actually really liked that part.
Me too.
I think it did
a
pretty good job of kind of making the... Because a lot of this book doesn't translate to a movie very well. And so I think they needed to kind of insert something that is more attuned to a movie. That kind of gets some of that kind of weirdness across. And so the scene in the river was pretty... The car crash didn't feel as necessary to me.
The car crash was super weird, when there's just... it's tough with
But the scene where they're driving the car through the woods and then end up in the river, and then it ends up just being... Like, it doesn't matter at all. And he's turning the wheel as if he's steering in the water, but then he just kind of looks at his wife and is like, I don't know. Like, he's clear. Like, all that conveyed sort of the tone of the book pretty well, but in a movie form as opposed to book form. So I liked that bit. I also think that they really nailed the look of this movie. Like, the suburbs and the grocery store and the sort of like slightly flat colors.
It
did a good job of really making the world look like it felt like the book I was reading. You know what I mean? Like, they really nailed it.
Yeah, one of the big things they do in the
makeup.
The makeup too, but the set design and production design is just all the brand names. Like, you might, this is like the most product placement maybe in history, but it's obviously intentional. The grocery store, you're around their house, there's that sequence where he digs through the trash to find the discarded bottle of Dialar, and there's just like all the packaging around him. This like sort of like
that was a good
mosaic
scene
of products. Yeah, it was a good scene. But you're right, Brick, is sort of like it conveys that the little thing is just like lists of details of things that are around them that are constant in the book. You sort of see it around you visually, right? It becomes that same sort of feeling, which is I think really effective and really cool.
And I thought they nailed the schlubbiness of Jack.
Oh yeah,
like he's way more schlubby than I feel like he is in the novel.
Yeah,
but it like fits because he's such a fuck up.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if it looked like he actually gained that weight.
Yeah, at first I thought he was in a fat suit, but there was a shirtless scene. It looks like he maybe
he had that pot belly.
Yeah.
And they really were doing a lot of multiple chin work on Driver too. He was doing a lot of like sort of like moving.
He's always in kind of weird angles too.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's a lot of like looking down from up top while his
And I mean, for an actor who is sort of like physically interesting anyway, like he's just a very interesting, I mean, he's a really handsome dude. He like just is different looking. He's tall, he's kind of lanky, he has a long face.
Yeah.
And they really sort of make him seem like that kind of like Midwestern paunchy, you know, middle-aged professor look. It's really good. I liked the, so going back to that camp sequence and like the whole toxic event, you know, middle portion, essentially. I really liked how it became a Spielberg movie in that sequence, right? Like down to like the lighting choices, the angles. It was like full on Spielberg and it felt appropriate. And so the end of it with that sequence of the river felt like the ending of a action sequence in Jurassic Park or something. It all felt like of a piece, which was really cool. And then the third part, it becomes a David Fincher movie when it turns to, like, the lighting turns green.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like low angles of cars driving in the like rain at night. It was really like obvious like media touch points for representing certain kinds of modes of storytelling. And I was reading some criticism last night before I went to bed, and some critics were sort of flagging that as a problem, and others were seeing part of the asset of the movie. Did you guys feel it was disjointed in that sense, or did you like that sort of felt like there were different modes going on at different times?
I didn't feel it was disjointed. I felt like, I mean, that was a noticeable shift.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the changes to the ending. I thought it kind of streamlined it a little bit and made it a little more sense.
Yeah, I guess the big change to the ending is that, I mean, this is all spoilers, but whatever. Instead of, in the book, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the case. In the book, Jack goes to shoot the Dialar guy alone, right? And Babette's not involved at all?
I don't remember Babette being in the hotel room.
Yeah, I don't think so. Nico, do you remember?
I don't. Okay. No. And then what happens in the book? Does he
shoot? I'm pretty sure. I mean, I think that it's the same thing, well, but Babette's not involved. Like, he goes and shoots the guy.
I don't remember. Was it, that nurse scene was kind of expanded, too. I mean,
in there.
It's in there, but it felt...
There's a bit more because she's there.
Yeah.
But he definitely goes, takes the guy to get treated, and gets treated himself because he gets shot, too.
Does he go to an ER in a church?
Yeah.
Okay.
He does. I don't remember with atheist German nuns.
Yeah.
And she yells at him for asking about heaven.
Yeah.
That stuff was all true to the novel, but the Babette being there changes the tone of that. It makes it a bit more redemptive, whereas in the novel it didn't feel like that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a real push to kind of have the... I mean, it's a movie, so, you know, but the romance...
Yeah. Well, like, you want their relationship to be repaired. And they repair it through their, experience of violence, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what I thought was kind of the tension, and the kind of the tension not only between the tones, but kind of between, like, those weird action sequences, because there's two action sequences in the part where they're just sitting there on the highway. And then all of a sudden this car comes screaming down the shoulder and then hits something and flips over and like there's a huge crash.
Yeah.
And then it's done.
Yeah.
And there's no like consequences, there's no ramifications. It's just now we're at the camp.
Right.
And then later kind of the same thing happens where he drives off, he sees a guy with a like Second Amendment sticker and he's like, we're gonna follow this guy.
Right.
Because that's a brilliant idea. It follows him into the woods. Crashes into a river, goes down the thing, and then like they're fine,
right.
and the car's fine,
right.
And everything's fine, and it's like those scenes, like I liked the scene, but it did feel like it could get completely cut and nothing would have been lost.
Yeah, definitely.
I think all of that is kind of this tension because, like we talked about when we read the book, there's no real arc to this novel. It's like a lot of introductions, and the only thing that Jack Gladney really seems to want is not to die.
Yeah, right.
And everybody wants not to... They basically just want to live their comfortable lives and not die and not face any reality. And that is really tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To make into a movie because there's no drive in that character. I feel like those weird action sequences were like attempts because like they could feel that a normal movie would have escalations.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of does with the... with the diorama, but then we just sink back into like not wanting to die.
Right.
And so this was like kind of attempts to have those escalations and have those things that a normal movie would have, but I didn't really think it works because Jack still doesn't have any drive. He just wants to not die.
Right.
And wants to live he's like happy if you told him that he was just going to live in that moment where he sees the station wagons in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and that was going to be the rest of his life, and like Babette would be there, his kids would be downstairs, he'd be teaching at the school, he would take that. He would live in that moment forever.
Right.
And that's a problem with the movie. You know, it's when the first scene is the character's like ideal world, And then the rest of the movie is like, he just wants not to lose what he already has. That's really tough.
Yeah, and he's like, I guess he's tested by the idea of like literal death around him in the form of the toxic event and him becoming a killer potentially in right. the Dilarama sequence. But then, yeah, I mean, he ends up back at square one. It's like a Candide thing, right? Like he right. goes through his experiences and comes back and is like, well, I'm back where I was before. Who am I now? And like he accepts death through the guise of like, well, it's like part of the supermarket, right? You go there to like avoid it, but then you have to leave the supermarket at some point.
Yeah. It's just it's tough yeah. to make that into a movie because it's like he doesn't have to take any action at any point. If he doesn't take any action, he's fine.
Right.
Like maybe he has to drive to the center and spend a few days there, but like the whole thing with the gas station and where he's like, the whole point of the novel is that he's worrying about things that he has no control over and right. he can't take any action against them. And he's like, you know, so I feel like that's when the movie feels rudderless, is like when there should be something that he is trying to do, but really there's nothing he can do. And that's kind of the point.
Right. Yeah. You fill that space in with lists of products.
Right. Right.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. A lot of people would say this is an unfilmable book or whatever. I think they do the best job they could.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely...
The movie was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed they got as much into it as they did. I mean, they really, like, a couple... The things that I mentioned that were changed, aside from the ending, are mostly, like... You know, I would have dropped the dad character, too, right? And I maybe would have dropped it from the novel if I was editing to Lillo.
Yeah.
It wasn't the most necessary part. You know, there's the bit with Jack's ex-wife when she takes the daughter.
Right.
That, could, you know, is easily excised. There's no need to have that.
That was already confusing.
Yeah.
Like, the kids in the book were already confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one bit that I wish they left in that's a minor thing that doesn't have any... There's no reason to include it, except for I thought it could have been visually funny, is I always like the scenes where he has to run and track down the chemist professor or like the scientist, like the hot scientist woman on campus. Yeah. Whenever he has to fight her, he has to like run, like chase her across campus and like track her down. And then like they had this conversation where they pretend like they haven't like racing after each other the whole time. And that was really funny. And I wish that joke had been in there. Yeah. But I did like her character. She was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was great. I really liked how awesome. she like the scene where he gives her the pill and she's telling him about it. And she's like, okay, so there's this little hole and it's really clever. And the way, and then the water gets in. And then that dispenses the medicine over the course of, like, a really long time. And he's like, what does it do? And she's like, I have no idea.
He's like, aren't you... You're supposed to be brilliant. She's like, yeah. I'm a neuroscientist. No one knows what that is.
Yeah. That's great. I wish there had been a little more with the professors. I always thought that was a good part of the book. And they do kind of one scene at the table. Yeah. But it's one of those early, like, crosstalk chaotic scenes, which is, I think... I just think it's better. Like, I get... You know, the vibe of like the chaos and everybody just talks at once. And they did the same thing with the family. And then thankfully they kind of stopped doing that. They just did normal scenes where there's no crosstalk.
Right.
But I wish there had been more professors with no crosstalk. Cause like one of my favorite lines is like, have you ever brushed your teeth with your finger? And then they all talk about when they brush their teeth with their finger. And that was like in the background while he's talking to Murray.
Right.
I feel like that was too bad. But
yeah. Yeah, and they were all very interesting casting types.
Yeah.
Like, they looked cool. They're weird-looking guys. I think the only, like, notable person there is Andre 3000 was one of the professors, and he's really funny.
Yeah.
But they all looked like just a different variant of, like, bizarre professor you would not want to have teaching your class, probably.
Right.
And then I think the biggest thing we haven't talked about so far is the credit sequence, the big dance scene at the end.
That's my favorite part of the movie.
So weird.
It's really, yeah. So, Brick, why is it your favorite part?
It was just so weird. Yeah. It just kept going.
Yeah,
it was, and it was like a little stone.
It's like seven minutes.
It followed the cadence of a weird LCD sound system song where it was doing its thing, and then it goes into that 3 minute whatever.
Yeah, the breakdown part.
Yeah,
and all the dance sequence was weird. Everyone was on like this weird like 4 second loop.
Yeah,
But then some people weren't, so the cashier was actually checking out stuff, and then this other guy was just moving toilet paper back and forth.
Yeah.
And it just kept going.
Yeah, and at the very end, there, as the camera has sort of craned up to the kind of corner, and you're watching the whole grocery store, and people are doing their dances, but the
it's like a weird family, little diorama of strangeness.
Yeah, but the Gladneys were just, like, buying groceries. Like, they weren't dancing at all. They're, like, Adam Driver's just, like, bagging stuff normally, but everyone else are them zooks, so they're kind of weird, like half choreographed, half not dances. Like, I liked that it was... I guess it was all choreographed, but like but there were bits where it would sync up really quickly, and they were really exciting, and then we kind of go into more of the kind of like amorphous, just like movement stuff, and then we kind of link up again.
Yeah, it was like watching one of the said three net metronomes going, and every once in a while they match up, and then they go out of sync.
Yeah, okay. Totally. I like that a lot. Have you guys seen Buckaroo Banzai in the Across the Seventh Dimension, whatever?
For many years.
The old one from the '80s.
Yeah. It reminded me of that because the and in the Buckaroo Banzai. Like, there's that credit sequence where they're just, like, walking in the L.A. River Basin and just, like, being cool and vibing to the song. And it felt like that, but, like, a much more extended version of that with a different kind of feel to it. But it was, like, I like the move of, what if we end this movie with a 7-minute song?
It was so long.
It felt like a Bollywood movie to me where they're just like, anyway, we'll do one more song at the, for the credits that is nothing, where everybody just dances together and, like, it doesn't mean anything. It's just...
It felt like one of those things that was going to go on for a couple minutes and fade to black, and then the rest of the, and it just kept going.
Yeah, and then it kept going even after all the credits were done. It kept going for a little bit longer after that. So people were like, "This is really going on for a long time." Yeah. I thought it was great. I really liked that part. I would watch just that. I think again. I was saying to you guys last night. I think this movie, as I was watching, I was like, "It's too bad that people don't watch cable as much anymore, or the same way because this is a Netflix movie, so it's on streaming. So you could stumble upon it, right?" But ideally, I think you should watch this movie from the from the middle, and then go back and watch the beginning later. Like you have to. It reminds me of those movies that you'd watch as a kid or teenager. You'd like find on TV something. I was like, "What the fuck is
USA
this
Up
movie?
All
What's
Night?
Happening? Was it
USA Up All Night?
Yeah, or like Brazil, for instance. Like I remember watching Brazil after and be like, "What is this fucking movie?" Like I didn't know what it was at the time.
Movie.
I didn't. You had to go so figure out the rest of the puzzle yourself. If this movie would really thrive in that kind of environment, and streaming just not gonna. You know, allow for that the same way. But yeah, I mean, it's worth watching for sure, I think. I think it's definitely worth an evening's, if you're, especially if you're maybe a little stoned would help, probably.
Yeah. It would have the same moment as the, is that Robert De Niro in Brazil?
Right.
With,
yes,
like, exactly. Is that Andre 3000? What is he doing?
Yeah, why is he in this movie?
He's just in the background. And then they, like, all do... They all came up in that dance sequence and like they each had a box that was like unbranded and just said cookies or toilet paper or whatever.
Yeah.
And he like didn't put his in the cart.
And he just does a little like kind of like shimmy with it the whole time.
Every character in the movie had their own little weird, like the doctor was dancing off in the corner.
Yeah. The doctor on the phone, the guy he calls to about the prescription pills I read was Kenneth Lonergan, like a little voice cameo. Which is cool. He's great, a great director and playwright too. Yeah, okay. So overall, I'm saying thumbs up on White Noise.
Worth watching. I do think if you haven't read the book, this movie would make far less sense.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I wonder if some of the critical response that was negative was people who were like, this is just fucking weird. Like, if you didn't know what the book was like, I think the dialogue would be so off-putting.
They try to mitigate that a little bit by introducing the Dylar stuff kind of right away.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably part of the reason why Pat Babette's more integral to the plot of the whole movie more scenes to kind of provide some of that backbone. But even then, you know, like a lot of that, especially with the way the dialogue flows, a lot of that like fear of death and my condition and all that, I can see it just being lost in word salad if you don't know that that's what she's talking about.
Right. Before we should mention Greta Gerwig. We didn't talk about her performance. I thought she was really good.
I did too.
She really sells the kind of like daffiness of Babette. And then when she gets serious and gets like, when she cries and reveals to Jack what happened, like I really bought it. Like she's just really good. She's a great performer.
Yeah.
And really embodied that role really well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Without being caricature. I mean, she was obviously doing a theater performance, but she wasn't like, you could see that being like a dowdy mom.
I mean, I think she and Adam Driver delivered those scenes the way they were directed to deliver those scenes. Totally. I just don't think they all worked as well as like some others.
Right.
Because that was another like hard tone shift when she's like, yeah, I go and fuck this guy for Dylar pills every once in a while. That was tough. That's like not it just doesn't fit tonally with the rest of that whole sequence. Right. And then like the way that he goes in to Mr. Gray's room and basically incapacitates him by saying like falling aircraft, and then
yeah,
Mr. Gray like freaks out.
Yeah.
That just does not fit with like the dude who is like coercing sex from somebody for pills.
You know? Right.
It's so much darker.
Yeah.
And more serious.
Yeah. Yeah. The bit where he sees in the reflection of the TV screen, like Babette in the bed, wasn't that pretty intense?
Yeah.
But good. Before we wrap up, one quick DeLillo note. You know, I was reading that book End Zone I told you guys about a while back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I had sort of like had kind of fallen off of it, which was easy to do because I think with DeLillo, you can easily fall off the, since like Nico said, there's often not like an arc or a plot to follow. In this book especially, there was no plot. It was just conversations. And so if you like get out of the mode and then stop reading it, it's hard to get back into it. But I finally finished it. And I mean, spoiler for End Zone, if you're ever going to read it, I don't think you ever will. It's a book about football. It's about these college football players in like West Texas. And one of them is a running back, and he's the narrator, and he just like talks about football, talks about nuclear war. It's basically all about like football as metaphor for like nuclear annihilation, essentially. But it's just conversations that go nowhere, kind of, you know, in that DeLillo style. And then in the last paragraph, the character gets like a horrible illness and dies.
What?
It's so insane. The last paragraph is like, oh yeah, then I got like cancer and die later. It's really fucking insane.
What the hell?
It's just, I read it and laughed because I was like, it's clearly, that's the point, right? It's DeLillo's like, you know, there's no arc. There's just like, things just end, right? And that's, you know, I'm not going to deal with anything about character here for you.
Yeah.
But also it did feel like he was like, I'm done writing this book. Like, what if the guy just dies?
The 1900s were a wild time.
Yeah.
In books.
Just nuts. I couldn't believe I'd read through that whole fucking thing and got that. Fuck.
Fuck you ending.
Totally a fuck you ending.
Yeah.
Alright, well listeners, tell us, if you watched White Noise, tell us what you thought about it. You can email us those thoughts at yakbabiespodcast@gmail.com, or you can post on our Patreon, patreon.com/yakbabies, where we have our bonus podcast hosted for $1 a month. You can get access to it and find all kinds of conversations there. There's good stuff happening where we talk about jokes. Well, debatably good stuff. Some of it's good, some of it's rough. You'll find out. There's a stack tournament. There's all kinds of bro-to-bro conversations there. Really worth your dollar for sure. And you can also post there and ask us questions and share us your thoughts about the film. And we also have our merch shop, tinyurl.com/yakbabies, where we have all kinds of posters and design t-shirts, mugs designed by Brick that are really good inside jokes from the show. So if you like Yak Babies, want to show it off to your friends and family and then confuse them about why you like it, you should buy those shirts and mugs. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all the loyal listeners, and especially their patrons, both past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, Roger, Kathleen, Bailey, Andrew, Gilbert, and William Howard Taft.